to do?
Well, I too am glad to be here. It's an improbable and interesting agenda. I like it very much. So I'm going to mention just three things. Thanks to knowing Lee and his kind of unfailing generosity with a unreconstructed Drosophila geneticist, I've managed to learn a little teeny bit about quantum gravity and found myself in my third book coming up with a theory about how the laws could change. What matters for this discussion is not whether or not Stu Kaufman's particular non-physicist theory about how the laws could change is right. What I think matters is the fact that it's one of those things that could be right. And therefore, it sets a framework, or it's an exemplar of a theory that has a meta-theory. So I'll just give a couple of words on it. It assumes that there's a space of laws. That's the meta-theory. There's a finitely describable space of laws, infinite, but innumerably infinite. And then it imagines that the way the world runs is one in which the laws themselves can change, that there can be quantum uncertainty about the laws, and then it relies on the notion of additive and interfering Feynman interactions to pick out those laws that have the least effect on the propagation of the Schrodinger wave. So it's a theory where there's a meta-theory, and then the laws evolve in a space of laws within the meta-theory. So that's an example of a case where the fundamental laws of physics evolve, but with a fixed meta-theory. Now, Lee, in that very book, The Life of the Cosmos, proposes a theory in which the laws are changing, and at first glance, there's no meta-theory. There's no fixed meta-theory. He simply assumes that that when new universes are given birth in black holes, there's a slight change in the constants of the theory, and therefore there's an evolution of the laws by a kind of cosmic natural selection. I suspect that in Lee's example, there is still a fixed set of laws, and what's changing are the constants. So once again, there's a fixed background in which this is occurring. Now let me give you a case where I think that there are laws that emerge, but as a matter of fact, it's contingent. And that's in biology, and I'm a biologist. And no one knows how life started, but now there's something called Mendel's laws. Mendel's laws rest upon the way in sex, the maternal and paternal homologs of a given pair of chromosomes are separated in meiosis, then randomly sampled and going into the germ cells, the sperm and the egg, and then reassembled in a union when the sperm and the egg unite to make a new individual. Mendel's laws, which work perfectly well for eukaryotes and are regarded as laws, nevertheless are entirely contingent. Before there was sex, they weren't there. It required the evolution of a very fancy genetic apparatus to manage to carry out meiosis and meiotic reduction. It's a puzzlement how that came about, but there's no doubt that it's a contingent thing. So biology seems to be a case where we can look for the evolution of things that become laws that then govern the way the system thereafter evolves. So one of the things to carry in our minds is that when you think about that, when new laws emerge, it changes the future evolution of the system, which therefore changes what new future laws may evolve. So it doesn't seem like we can have a fixed framework for that case. Namely, we cannot finitely pre-state what the system's going to go do. And I think that's a very deep issue that we may want to come back to. Because since Newton, we have thought of having the laws and the particles and the initial and the boundary conditions, and then you compute. So you know ahead of time everything that can happen. You have a space of possibilities and a trajectory in a state space that specifies what occurs. I think that's entirely hogwash in the deep technical sense of the term hogwash. Okay, we all know. I think you can't do that for the biosphere. I think it's a very, very deep thing that Lee and I have talked about in the past, and it may be worth looking back to that, because it implies a radical kind of unknowability. You can't know what's going to happen, and you can't even necessarily know the laws under which it's going to happen. And that changes how we think about physics and everything in a profound way. That's tied to the last point that I want to make, which is one that a dear friend of mine, who unfortunately suffered a stroke, had. Richard Palmer is a late mid-career physicist at Duke and had a stroke around 5 years ago, which has disenabled him to a certain extent. Before Richard had his stroke, we were thinking about biological evolution. And he made a very interesting point that I don't know what to do with, but I'm going to throw it out for us to think about. In Newtonian physics, there are initial and boundary conditions, the particles, and a law. And the law is rigorously separate from initial and boundary conditions. Now, what Richard pointed out is that if you think about the evolution of sexuality, okay, it becomes a law, in some sense of law. And he raises the question that just is a very provocative question, which is, why do we think that initial and boundary conditions are always so clearly separable from law? And he, unfortunately, the stroke hit before Richard was able to get very far with that problem. But it seems to me that it's a provocative way of pointing out that maybe there's something wrong with the way Newton told us how to do things. And I'll end there.